All right, coming up on the program, Chess Palminteri is going to be here. Star of stage and screen. One of the great screenwriters, too. Sort of unheralded in terms of what he did there. Richard Roper is with us today as Anna DeVlantis is off. And all right now, if you watch that show, The Circus, on Showtime, you're going to be familiar with our next caller, our next guest, and some of the other kind of long form pieces around the Trump campaign have mentioned Roger Stone. Roger Stone is a longtime political mocker. I think that's a term that that we can use properly, Mr. Stone, to describe you. Came up through the Nixon administration, right? And you were you've been involved in Republican politics basically for the best part of the last 40 years. And you're one of the first guys who thought that Donald Trump should get in this race. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I've actually wanted him to run for president since 1988. He first went to New Hampshire to speak to the New Hampshire Chamber of Commerce. I tried to convince him to run in 2000 against George W. Bush and Al Gore as a Reform Party candidate. He was unfortunately not interested. Then I tried to get him to run 3 years ago because I thought he would be a superior candidate to Mitt Romney. So I'm among those who is not surprised by Trump-NATO, not surprised by his historic rise, violating every rule of conventional campaigning and running the table on these Republican primaries where the voters actually vote.
Yeah, well, Republican primary voters vote. I mean, I don't know if they don't quite have the numbers of a general, but he's drawing a lot of people out. He's drawing new voters in, and it's interesting, with the exception of New York, which is a closed primary for all intents and purposes, where you have to register as a Republican or a Democrat, and then you're able, and you have to, obviously that's what kept the Trump kids from being able to vote for their dad. You have to register well in advance. You know, he's done very, very well in open primaries where there have been a lot of Democrats involved. But the thing that that gets me, Roger, and I just don't fully understand it. And I know that you've been around a long time. As I said, you've written some books, The Clinton's War on Women, and Jeb, with an exclamation point, and the Bush crime family available in paperback now. But I don't know why people can trust him or how people can trust him, because there's no detail to what he's saying.
Well, I think they have to look at his overall track record as someone who gets things done, someone who gets the big picture, someone who is not a career politician. Look, one thing we do know, the people who've been running the country for 30 years, Republicans and Democrats, career politicians, essentially the Bush and the Clinton, they already demonstrated that they're a failure. We don't have to speculate on how they would do on our economy or immigration or trade or even our foreign policy. So I think the American people are ready for something much different. Trump is going to have to be more specific, but that's what a campaign is about. It's an education process. Perfect example of that was the foreign policy speech last week, in which he revealed that he's not a neocon.
He's not a what? Say that again. Your phone's breaking up a little bit.
He is not a neocon. Okay. He takes a more Reaganistic approach to foreign affairs. He believes in peace through strength, but unlike George W. Bush, or for that matter, Barack Obama, he would not rush us off to foreign wars without understanding what the Middle interests are.
Yeah, but I think a lot. But I mean, I read that speech. I didn't actually see him deliver it, and there was a lot of contradiction in that speech. I didn't think that there really was the kind of, again, not a whole lot of detail. He did talk about, specifically with Russia, right? Because we all know, and now we're seeing sort of increased tensions with the flybys in the Baltic and the other stuff that's going on between U.S. and Russian military assets in both the eastern and western coasts of Mother Russia. There's tension. And on that point, he said, well, I don't know, maybe we'll be able to negotiate with them. I don't know. Well, that's not enough for me. You know, it's sort of like, where do you stand? What do you see? And I guess in a primary, and this is the thing that shocks me, Roger, is that that detail is unimportant, at least with his voters. Now, the question is, once you get to a general, can that hold? Do you think it can hold?
I think he's going to be more specific. I actually think he's been a bit more specific about his situation with the Russians. This is what I'm saying. When you advance with your bayonet and you find steel, retreat. When you find mush, advance. They don't respect Barack Obama. They're laughing at us. Because he keeps drawing lines in the sand, and then they overstep them. So I think that Trump understands that Putin is a very tough guy. He respects only toughness. He respects only resolute leadership. And he has no respect for Barack Obama, which is why he keeps provocating as he has been. Trump would be an even match for Putin. He's the guy I want negotiating for the United States. That is his greatest strength.
All right, Roger, you know, we're going to take a real quick time out here. We're going to try and fix your phone, if that's possible, because we're having some dropouts here. So hold on, we'll talk to our producers about fixing that situation. And in the meantime, this week on Chicago's Best, it's all about those little round delights to satisfy some big appetites. Join Brittany and Elliot for Chicago's Best Balls. Swear to God, Rich, that's what it says.
Okay.
Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. It's the Roe Con Show with Anna DeVlantis. Anna's off today. Richard Roper is in. Roger Stone. Many are saying that he's the man behind the man behind the man with Donald Trump. And Mr. Stone, all right, well, I got to ask you this. Before we took the break there, we were talking about, you know, the kind of detail and the sorts of things that Donald Trump is probably going to have to do as he heads toward the general. But today, I don't know if you've seen the news yet, but today he had to actually walk down the 101 in California to get to his rally and then back, you know, like he walked down one of those embankments, you know, through a field and then over a concrete barrier and all that to get to his motorcade because there were protests. Do you think these protests help him or hurt him in the long run?
I think they help him. First of all, as I demonstrated in a couple pieces I wrote after deep investigation, many of the people showing up are professional agitators paid by either MoveOn.org, we found Craigslist ads hiring them, or paid for by Black Lives Matter. This is an intentional attempt to incite or provoke violence that would then be blamed on Donald Trump. This is one of the greatest challenges the Trump supporters face. You have to ignore this. You can't be sucked in because violence will be unfairly blamed on Trump and his supporters. But I think it actually probably galvanizes his vote in the Republican primary. This is precisely the kind of PC nonsense that people are sick of.
All right. So if we get to a convention in Cleveland and he doesn't have the requisite 1237, and then somehow on the second or third ballot, he does not become the nominee, Ted Cruz or John Kasich or, you know, who knows, right? I mean, it could be Paul Ryan. Who knows? If it's that, would you advise him to run as a third party candidate?
I really wouldn't. First of all, I think he's going to be nominated on the first ballot. I think he'll get to 1237. My very best, most conservative count has him at 1250. And I've been through this process 9 times. I think I'm pretty much on the money. Now, it's not over till it's over, and there are still delegates to be chosen. I also have outlined that it's possible that he would get to 1237 on the first ballot, but that his victory could be undone in either a rules or a credentials fight, because I think the anti-Trump forces will have a majority on those questions, largely because many of these Trump delegate slots have been filled with non-Trump supporters by the party machines. Texas comes to mind. And therefore, those voters are bound to vote for Trump on the first ballot only, and they could vote against his interests in some kind of rules or credentials play to strip votes away from him.
Well, Roger, as you mentioned, you've been to so many of these conventions, and you know as much or if not more than just about anyone. And the rules, the more I read, the more I learn, the less I know, my friend. I can tell you that right now. Because you go all the way back to 1952. Isn't it true that Eisenhower really didn't have the votes when he went to the convention? There are ways of getting those delegates, right?
Exactly right. So what happened in that instance was Senator Robert Taft from Ohio did have the votes. He went to Chicago for the convention with 1,237 commitments in hand. The Eisenhower people challenged the seating of the Texas and Louisiana delegates in the credentials committee on the basis that Eisenhower voters had been turned away from the caucuses in Texas and produced some affidavits of people who said this. It failed in the credentials committee. But then it went to the full convention for ratification and was overturned there when the chairman ruled that the Texas and Louisiana Taft delegates could not vote on their own fate. So those are the kind of machinations that allowed Eisenhower to euchre the nomination away from Taft. Ted Cruz and the establishment have something very similar in mind.
Well, now, okay, so let's assume he gets past that, and let's assume that he is the candidate in the fall. Or actually, I think this election will start officially July 1, right? I mean, there's going to be no time off because there's going to be a lot of money being spent, and it's all for a position here. Do you get the sense, and you heard what John Boehner said, was it 2 days ago, former Speaker of the House, said he personally likes Donald Trump, but he just doesn't understand how he can win because he's alienated women, he's alienated minorities, and you just can't win in a general election doing that. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. The key thing to remember is he's not running against Joan of Arc. He's running against Hillary Clinton. She's got problems of her own. They may be recessed a little bit because, in all honesty, while Bernie Sanders has run a good race, he has not raised the areas of her greatest vulnerability. This will be a slugfest. Trump's got ground to make up, but I'm undaunted by the polls, which show him slightly behind, but nowhere out of range. He's going to have to make a major push among Hispanics who are here legally, among African-Americans, among younger women. But I think that's what a campaign is about. So I think he's actually, ironically, the only one who can win because he's the only one with the courage to go after Hillary in her areas of great vulnerability. We've already seen a number of Republicans say, well, Bill Clinton's sexual past is irrelevant. No, it's not irrelevant because of Hillary's role in covering up his misdeeds. Therefore, it's entirely
well.
Relevant.
Doesn't Donald Trump take the whole sexual thing out of the? I mean, let's face it. I mean, this is not that. Especially when they start running the stuff he said on Howard Stern, and he's been married a number of times, and he was married with a girlfriend when he met Melania and hit on her. I mean, it's like there's no. That you got to kind of take that off the table.
No, giant difference between consensual sex and marital infidelity and sexual assault and rape. And therefore, I expect women like Juanita Broderick and Kathleen Willey and Paula Jones and Christy Zurcher and Sandra Allen James and Becky Brown and Helen Dowdy and others to step forward and explain exactly their experiences at the hands of Bill and Hillary. I understand that this was mostly suppressed in the 80s before we had an internet. I understand when you try to discuss this on CNN, they unplug your microphone, but...
there's also a big difference between, and this is all due respect to these women, between somebody saying that and criminal charges being filed. There's a big difference between the allegations against Bill Clinton as opposed to someone like Mike Tyson, the convicted rapist who endorsed Donald Trump.
You're actually right. Although the $850,000 paid in the legal settlement to Paula Jones kind of indicates she's telling the truth, but you're absolutely right. There isn't a conviction. So let these women speak. Then let Hillary deny it and let the people decide who they believe.
Roger, I got to ask you this. You've just won a 2-week vacation, but you're going to be on a desert island with one person, and it has to be either Jeb Bush or Bill Clinton. Who do you go with?
Death's not an option. Death's not an option. Go ahead.
Good job. Well, at least Bill knows how to party.
Jeb
is such a stiff.
Yeah, I think you got the right answer there. I would go with Bill too, because he would certainly find something to have fun with. All right, thanks very much. Appreciate it, Roger. Thanks for being with us. By the way, the books are
many thanks.
Jeb and the Bush Crime Family. Jeb with an exclamation point. The Inside Story of an American Dynasty, and the Clinton's War on Women. These are just out right now. These are like these pop up books. All right. Well, Chaz Palminteri is going to be here, and he's actually going to be a pallet cleaner. Palminteri, the pallet cleaner,
we needed him.
Right, as we move toward the Carnarvon wagon with as much determined speed as we possibly can. He's bringing in a great American hero, too, and the dog who saved him.
Very
this is
cool.
Going to be really interesting. You're going to want to stay tuned for this. Plus, a Carnarvon wagon featuring bacon. What could possibly go wrong there? And so much more fun as we continue on here. The Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis on 720 WGN.